On this episode of Skeptico, Alex talks with attorney and UFO experiencer Ray Hernandez about his new organization aimed at providing support for experiencers.
Then my next encounter was late August of 2012, so approximately 6 months later. During that interim period, my wife began seeing numerous crafts, very large crafts, outside our house at night. I won't go into those details. And also in Mexico, when she went in Mexico, in one incident, it was seen by her sister, her two nieces, and three other professionals, actually four other professionals. There were two dentists, another attorney, and an architect in two cars. But anyway, let me go now to my incident, my second incident in August of 2012. Up until that point, I immediately did what any rational person would do when you've never been exposed to anything like this. You would go to the internet and you type in UFO, ETs, because I had no basis for any of this. I had never, maybe I saw one or two ancient alien shows, you know, that they have on TV, but this was totally outside of my mindset. And all it did was just confuse me even more. And so what had happened was that here I was, you know, that I don't know if they're devils or if they're angels, Anunnakis, and, you know, it's just total confusion.
Stay with us for Skeptico.
Welcome to Skeptico, where we explore controversial science with leading researchers, thinkers, and their critics. I'm your host, Alex Sakaris, and on this episode of Skeptico, we're going to talk about UFO contact and those people who have had direct experience with this other form of consciousness that we have trouble describing and talking about. But this is not just a show about this extraordinary phenomenon that has some amazing parallels with some of the other topics we've covered in terms of extended human consciousness. Many of you know that if you look into the research that's been done on the psychedelic experience, for example, you run into this alien slash other contact extended experience, the near-death experience in spiritually transformative experiences sometimes has some overlay with this alien slash other kind of consciousness contact. And while this interview has some amazing accounts of just those kind of incredible experiences, it's also a story about how one person can make a difference. As you'll hear from Ray's account, he took the experience that he had and his family had and was brave enough and bold enough to say, you know, I'm not going to let this go. I got to get to the bottom of this. And that has been the impetus for a rather amazing organization that he's just getting off the ground, aimed at generating some real scientific research into the contactee experience, as well as offering support for those who've been through this often life-changing kind of experience. This is a fascinating account from a rather amazing individual. I hope you enjoy my dialogue with Ray Hernandez. Today we welcome Ray Hernandez to Skeptico. Ray has a master's degree from Cornell and was on his way towards a PhD at Berkeley before changing course and getting his law degree and becoming a practicing attorney. But none of that has anything to do with why Ray is here on Skeptico today, because Ray is the driving force and the co-founder of the Foundation for the Research into Extraterrestrial Encounters. The acronym for that happens to be FREE, which is quite handy. So, Ray, welcome to Skeptico, and thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you, Alex. It's a pleasure.
So, Ray, I've known you for quite a while, which I think is an interesting part of this story. And for that reason, I don't really want to start at the beginning. I want to start at kind of the middle, or maybe even where we're at right now, 2.5 years plus after you had this amazing ET encounter that really kind of shattered your world. But the reason I want to start now, and I want to get into talking about the foundation and what you've done, is that I think one of the amazing things about your story is about how you've allowed it to transform your life.
And like I said, I know that because very early on, you had contacted me and said, hey, I don't know what to do with this experience. I think you're at the beginning stages of this search that you were doing about what do I do about this experience? But I really, really am so impressed that you just took it head on. I mean, you're obviously a really smart guy. You're a well-educated guy. You have this unbelievable, completely paradigm-busting experience that thousands and thousands of people have had, but you don't just bury it. You just dive right into it and say, okay, I got to figure this stuff out. Start there and tell me why you felt so compelled to take action in that way.
Well, Alex, you hit the nail on the head. This was definitely a paradigm busting experience or ride that I've been on for the last 2.5 years. I guess to address your question, you have to understand where I came from, my mindset. I was your typical overeducated, material, rationalist, agnostic. I did not have a religious background, even though I did have I was baptized and I had a communion. My parents were not very religious. We did not go to church. And my academic background is, as you noted, I had gone to had graduated from Rutgers with honors. I then got a full academic scholarship to Cornell for a master's program in urban planning. And then I received the National Science Foundation PhD fellowship to attend basically any university that I wanted in the United States. And I decided to attend Berkeley. And I also had gotten admitted into MIT. So the spiritualist side, the consciousness side of me that I have now, that was the total antithesis of what I was a few years ago, given my background. What had happened was a series of experiences which led me to reach out and find out what is the true nature of our reality, because the experience that I had totally exploded. It was like a nuclear bomb that just dropped on my rationalist mindset. This was not the science that I had learned. This was not the rationality that I had been exposed to. They could not be explained by modern science. And myself having the academic background that I had, I started to explore, you know, what the hell happened to me.
Right. And Ray, I think we should, I mean, I kind of said the opposite at the beginning, but, I think we should probably at this point tell people about these series of experiences really briefly that you had. And some of the things that are amazing about him, folks, here is a guy, because he does have that logical, scientific background. Number one, you have multiple experiences. You have experiences with multiple and different eyewitnesses, right? So these are not experiences where just you are having them. Actually, you get pulled into the first one. The first one isn't even your experience. Someone comes in, your wife, but comes and pulls you into that experience. But then you have other experiences with neighbors. You have experiences with other relatives who you never see that much. So this is a profound set of experiences that are hard to dismiss, but you need to go ahead and I'm sorry, I don't want to take away your story. So please fill us in on briefly some of these experiences that happened starting 2.5 years ago.
I'll try to be very brief. The very first experience that I had was in March of 2012. It occurred on a Sunday morning at approximately 6 a.m. The day before, on a Saturday, we had a 16-year-old Jack Russell Terrier that we were basically keeping her alive with medications. She was pretty much in her last months. What had happened was she got a stroke and she became paralyzed from the neck down Saturday at approximately 6 p.m. or so. At that time, we had a decision. Do we bring her to one of these medical hospitals? At that point, we decided since she wasn't in pain, she was appeared just to look confused, we would bring her Monday to our veterinarian and put her to sleep and do a ceremony for her because she was like our first daughter. The next day, Sunday morning at 6 o'clock, my wife woke up, carried the dog to see if it had regained her mobility, our pet was not able to move at all, except just from the neck up. My wife then carried her down the stairs, and when she got down there, she saw an object that was floating 4 feet off the ground, 1 foot from the wall, and it was metallic in shape, approximately like an upside-down U, it looked like, and had these two green lights in the center. And my wife, being the good hardcore Catholic from Mexico that she is, she knelt down and started praying, and basically in her head saying that if you're a bad spirit, leave. But if you are a good spirit or an angel or the Virgin Mary, you know, the Mexicans always see the Virgin Marys everywhere. And she said, please stay and don't let my dog suffer. My poor nenita. Nena is her name, which means little girl in Spanish. And then all of a sudden, these green lights started blinking and started flashing on her, like scanning her. And at that point, she freaked out and she started yelling for me. And she started screaming my name, and it was 6 a.m, and I thought that she had seen a cockroach or a little mouse on the floor, and I just totally ignored her. After 10 or 15 minutes of screaming for me to come downstairs, she went upstairs and literally hauled me out of bed. When I got downstairs, what I saw was not the object that she had seen. What I saw was, I guess could be described as a plasma object. But this was not just an object. I call it a plasma beam, a light beam, because it did control my mind. It was shaped approximately 2 to 3 feet in width, 1.5 to 2 feet in height, cylindrical in shape, but it didn't have any external outer edges because it was a pure energy, a plasma, multicolored, translucent. And when I looked at it, I did not have any peripheral vision. I could just only see straight ahead at that object. I could not see to my right or to the left or up and down. It was just focused only on that object. And what I did was quite irrational. I stared at it. I waved my hand at it. And then I said, BS. Because I don't think I'm allowed to say the wording of it. But basically, you know, BS. And then I turned around. I walked upstairs. I went to my bed. I folded my hands on my belly. And I looked straight up at the ceiling. So for 15 minutes, I was in this hypnotic state with nothing entering my brain, my consciousness. After 15 minutes, it was as if the hypnotist said, okay, kid, wake up. We're finished with your wife and your pet. And all of a sudden, I woke up and I said, oh, my God, what in the world just happened? And I ran downstairs and there was my wife jumping up and down saying, hallelujah, hallelujah, the angels cured her, the angels cured her. And she was running around the living room dancing, and the dog was jumping up and down and running with the energy of a little puppy. And right there, my whole worldview was totally shattered.
Wow.
That was the first event.
Let me pull out a couple of things from there. I mean, so number one, as we said, this is kind of your wife's experience, but I thought what was interesting is you talk about the mind control aspect of it. It's going to be highly controversial. I mean, the whole thing's controversial. I mean, how are we going to get past that? But as you break down the parts that are most controversial, I love how you have put it together for yourself, because folks, this is the tip of the iceberg, right? So this is the first experience.
Yes,
he's had
definitely
a number of unbelievable experiences. So Ray has had a number of these experiences, not all of them like this, but experiences with his neighbors, experiences with his relatives. It just goes on and on. But I want to pull out this mind control part, because I thought it was very interesting what you said, that somehow, as you look back, this thing must have had control of your mind, both the way it gave you the tunnel vision and the other part that relates to so many of these encounters that we hear about that is confounding to people who are skeptical or are not familiar with it, is you acted in this extremely irrational way where you just said, hey, forget about it. Let me go up and go back to bed. Tell us a little bit about the mind control part of it. Well, what do you think is going on there?
Well, Alex, for approximately 6 months, I was so confused because I could not rationalize why I acted the way I did. At that point, I was still thinking that it was my irrationality. It was something that I controlled, not that this object controlled. So the whole time I was like, why did I act that way? Why did I act that way? And I had no response, okay? Until much later on, after I got my second incident, then I knew exactly why I acted that way, because I was not under control. It was an external entity that controlled my consciousness.
Tell folks briefly about that second encounter.
Yeah, let me go through that second encounter. What happened was that for the next 6 months or so, then my next encounter was late August of 2012, so approximately 6 months later. During that interim period, my wife began seeing numerous crafts, large crafts, very large crafts, outside our house at night. I won't go into those details. And also in Mexico, when she went in Mexico, in one incident, it was seen by her sister, her two nieces, and three other professionals, actually four other professionals. There were two dentists, another attorney, and an architect in two cars. But anyway, let me go now to my incident, my second incident in August of 2012. Up until that point, I immediately did what any rational person would do when you've never been exposed to anything like this. You would go to the internet and you type in UFO, ETs, because I had no basis for any of this. I had never, maybe I saw one or two ancient alien shows, you know, that they have on TV, but this was totally outside of my mindset. And all it did was just confuse me even more. And so what had happened was that here I was, you know, that they're, you know, I don't know if they're devils or if they're angels, Anunnakis, and, you know, it's just total confusion. But that day, a lot of my confusion was completely stopped. I had been waiting for a friend of mine to give me some documents. He had called me up and he said, "Ray, I finally got the documents." And I said, "Okay, come by. Where are you at?" And he said, "Oh, I'm very close by." So I'm waiting outside for him. I live in a cul-de-sac. This is approximately 9 o'clock in the evening. Totally cloudy night, not one star in the sky, complete overcast. And I had remembered two things instantaneously that popped into my head. One was, I never am outside at that time of night in the front of my yard. And I immediately was looking right at the area that my wife had described 3 months ago, where she had seen a huge, gigantic craft that had colors at the edges like a stained glass window. Because again, she sees them as angelic crafts. So she compares the colors like the stained glass windows in our church. And then I remembered the day before I had watched the video on YouTube of this man who called down these crafts. And so while I'm waiting for my friend to come by with these papers, I said, the hell with it. Let me try. So I said, "Oh, I want to see you, the beautiful angelic craft that my wife saw with the colorful stained glass windows on the edges. She has seen you. I haven't seen you. I want to see you, please." And I do a 180 turnaround. Nothing. After 50 minutes of doing that, you know, I said to myself, "I'm really losing it. You know, I'm going freaking crazy. You know, I really lost it this time. Try to call out a craft." And I started laughing to myself. You know, I'm really nuts. All of a sudden, on top of my neighbor's house, literally 5 feet from the roof, was a half a stadium, football stadium size craft. I could tell that it was at least two blocks in depth, because we have these huge, gigantic trees that were about two blocks away, and it was still further away than those huge trees. The width was approximately the size of, at least the front width, of two ranch-style houses. It was on top of a ranch-style house right next door to mine, because I live in the cul-de-sac. And then at that point, I was like, holy, you know what? And what it was made up of was thousands and thousands of of light streaks that formed the whole shell of this craft. And it was semi-translucent, so you could see through it. You could see the clouds in the background, but you definitely knew what it was because of the shape of it. And then all of a sudden, a thought popped into my mind. Now, I know it wasn't my thought. It was put into my mind. It was my daughter telling me, "Daddy, you and Mommy have seen UFOs. Next time you guys see a UFO, you call me because I want to see them." Okay, that's what popped into my head, clear as a doorbell ringing right in front of us here. So I immediately stepped like 10 feet to my right, and I started yelling at my daughter outside her window. And I said, Scott, come outside. And she opened up the window, and she said, "What is it, Daddy?" I said, "There's a UFO out here. There's a UFO out here. Get out here." So within 10 seconds, he's outside. And so now you have two people, my just recently turned 10-year-old daughter and myself, were looking at this craft. And we weren't scared. we were being entertained. That's at least the thoughts that both of us had in our head. Then about 15 minutes later, after we were observing these thousands of light streaks on top of my neighbor's house, came not only my friend, who's at that time he was 48 years old, Mexican, hardcore Catholic. His wife, who was 52 years old, from Colombia, another hardcore Catholic, and their 17-year-old daughter. So they immediately leave the car right in the middle of the cul-de-sac. They run to us and they said, you know, what the hell is that? And I said, you know what it is. It's a UFO. And remember I told you that, you know, my wife and I had seen that entity inside our house. I said, it's come back. I didn't tell them, but I called them. And then for the next 10 minutes, they started to come up with rational explanations of what this thing could be. And then for the next 10 minutes, I was coming up with rational explanations why their rational explanations were not appropriate. And then in my head, what popped into my head was a thought that, hey, they don't believe you. Like I was communicating to this craft, you know, they don't believe you. All of a sudden, the lights completely changed. Instead of these thousands and thousands of oblong light streaks, those terminated, and what was replaced was thousands of stars. And the stars were sort of 10 times the size of Venus that were blinking on and off like 3 or 4 times a second. And it was throughout the whole craft. And at that point, no one had any doubt what this was. Then my friends, after 10 minutes, they said, oh, we got to go. We got things to do. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even question it. I said, okay, don't worry about that paper. I'll take care of it. I'll give you a call tomorrow. Okay. And they left. And then my daughter stayed there watching the light show with me. After another 15 minutes, all of a sudden, I felt like I was being attacked by mosquitoes. I started slapping my legs because I had shorts on. And then I said, come on, Scott, let's go inside. These mosquitoes are killing me. So I walked inside with my daughter. And then 5 minutes later, my daughter goes to me, Daddy, there were no mosquitoes outside. And then all of a sudden, it was like the hypnotist snapped his fingers again, just like when I was upstairs in my bedroom. Said, okay, kid, we're done with you. You know, wake up now. And all of a sudden, it was like I came into a new consciousness. While I was outside, I thought I was fully conscious of everything because you're talking normally like we're talking now. But what has happened is that part of your consciousness, the one that relates to your rationalization of that craft, that rationalization was not working. It was totally disconnected. But yet everything else in your consciousness was working properly. And at that point, I said, holy, you know what? I grabbed my camera, my video camera and my photographic camera, and I ran outside. Poof, was gone. Nothing was there. And at that point was then I started to put all the pieces together. I started to say, you know, these entities, they controlled my mind, just like they did inside my bedroom. But look how sophisticated their technology or their mind or whatever it is, that they were able to control half of my consciousness or part of my consciousness. That's how sophisticated they were. And they weren't even next to me. They were maybe 50 feet away from me was this craft. So even at a distance, they were able to do this to me, okay? And then make my mind think that there are mosquitoes around. At that point, it was like, oh my God, this thing is so much more complex than I ever thought it was.
Right. So that's amazing. And then that isn't even the end of it then.
No, right? No. I mean, the important part was not even me seeing this with 5 witnesses. That wasn't even the major component of it. What the major component was what happened afterwards. Up until that point, I had been on YouTube and on the internet every day, 4 hours a day at least, just trying to read anything I could about, you know, ETs, UFOs, aliens, you know, the whole works. And then I had already read like maybe 30 books on UFOs. I already had like another 10 books to read that I had ordered from Amazon. After that day, I went cold turkey. I stopped going to the internet. Those books are still unread on UFOs. All I did was reorder books from Amazon on near-death experiences and consciousness studies. And that's how you became involved, because I was I typed in, you know, consciousness studies into the internet, then your radio block came on. And that's how I first became educated to this field. I started reading. Goodness, I would order like 10 books from Amazon. I would read almost all of them like in a week. And then I would order 10 more. Then when I was down to two, I would order 10 more. And tons of ebooks too. And I became pretty much an expert in NDEs. And consciousness studies is different because that's so much more complicated, as you know. But that's what I did for four straight months. My wife thought I was going crazy. I thought I was going nuts because all of a sudden I had sort of like a heroin addiction that I had to read these books. And it was up until 3:30 in the morning when I couldn't read anymore. That's when I would fall asleep and I would wake up with a book on my bed. It was that type of a scenario. And then what happened 4 months later in late December of 2012, up to that point, I had never asked anyone, I never spoke with anyone about NDEs, let alone consciousness studies, and except my wife. And over a three-day period, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, the very first three people I had spoken to about NDEs all had NDEs.
Wow.
And what are the statistical, probabilities of that happening? You know, it's like hitting the lottery 3 days in a row, you know? So the very first one was my daughter's pediatrician. I won't go into the details, but I've never met this woman. My wife is the one that always brought her to the pediatrician. That day, for whatever reason, my wife couldn't bring her, so I brought her. Out of my mouth, as I was saying it, I was like, why the hell am I telling this to this woman? I don't even know her. And so my mouth was saying something. My mind was like, you know, your mouth is out of control. Why am I saying this? Anyway, I said, excuse me, doctor, have you ever heard of the term near-death experiences? I've just finished reading approximately 300 books on this topic. And out of those 300 books, I would say 75 were written by medical doctors. And out of those 75 books, approximately 20 books were written by professors in medical schools. So this topic has been scientifically studied for at least 30 years, and it's something that you need to know about. It was at that point that her eyeballs popped out. And I said, oh, my God, I offended this woman. You know, she right. thinks I'm nuts. You know, and I said, excuse me, doctor, I didn't mean to offend you. You know, that was totally inappropriate. I don't know why I said that. You know, no. I want to know, how did you know I had one?
Wow.
And then she goes on to the details, how when she was 10 years old, she was brought into a hospital in Venezuela. She floated out of her body. She described exactly what the doctor looked like, what the nurse looked like. She then went through a couple of walls and was right on top of her parents. And then in her office, and my daughter was right next to me the whole time, she told me verbatim over a 15-minute period the conversation that her parents had. Okay. Then she floated right back through these walls again, right on top of her. And she saw that the doctor had quit giving her that the defibrillator. And then put a syringe in her heart. And then the next thing she remembers is waking up and her parents at her bedside. And then said, oh, mommy and daddy, what a dream I had. Then told them all the details.
Wow.
That's Friday. The next day on a Saturday, we had a church dinner. I was not very religious. I'm still not religious. But I certainly am very deeply spiritual now, which I was not before. But I accompanied my daughter at a dinner for married couples at our church, our Catholic church. She sat next to this lady who's from Mexico, just like herself, and I recognized the lady. But her husband, who's Cuban like I am, I never met this fellow before. So again, out of the blue, the same verbiage comes out of my mouth. And as I'm saying it, I'm like, why in the hell is this thing coming out of my mouth? You know, I just couldn't understand that. But then again, this guy's eyeballs pop out. And then he tells me how recently his mother died in his arms. And then when she was revived in the hospital, approximately 45 minutes later, when she woke up, she told him her NDE experience. She even described the ambulance workers. She said it was a fat black guy, 6'3", 300 pounds, came crashing through the door. Right behind him was a short white woman with a blonde ponytail. Dressed, I forgot what color it was, green or blue, whatever it was that the paramedics wear. And it was the paramedics. Okay. She then described going through the tunnel, going into the light, and then there encountering her previously deceased husband. And then she said that the previously deceased husband then presented her to an entity that she described as God. And so at that point, this is a Saturday night, I said, this is not a coincidence. You know, you're still trying to think rationally, like what is going on, you know? And then that was when I made the association with myself reading all those NDE books, you know? Because before then, you know, it's like, oh, it was a coincidence, you know, the first thing that happened, you know, with the doctor. Then this thing happened. It's like, wow, this is not a coincidence. This is some freaky, you know what, that's going on. But I still hadn't made the full connection then at that point. The next day, Friday, on the weekends, I always visit my parents. So I said, I got to tell my atheist father about what just took place. Because at that time, 2 years ago, he was 83 years old, bedridden. You name the illness, and he's got it. Mm-hmm. And so at that point, I was like, you know, he doesn't have too much time to live. I need to give him, you know, some concept that you know, that life continues after we die, that there is spirit, you know, soul, whatever you might want to call it.
Sure.
So then I tell him what happened the last 2 days, and he goes, oh, that happened to me. And I was like in total shock because I never heard that story before. And I was like, what? I said, you never told me that before. And then he tells me the story about 15 years earlier when he had open heart surgery for a quadruple bypass. He floated out of his body, described all the doctors, all the nurse, you know, that he saw his chest wide open. And then he felt that he got sucked by a vacuum cleaner. He went into the tunnel, went into the light, and there waiting for him was his deceased mother and father and his brother. And then they presented him to God, and God then gave him what I know now is a life reveal. But, you know, obviously he didn't use that terminology. What he said that God gave him a 20-year lesson. He said he was up there at least 20 years. God showed him all the good and all the bad that he had done in his life, but not only with his consciousness, but also with the consciousness of the other person that he had affected. Mm-hmm. And my father said, for example, if I was had a fight with a 12-year-old kid, and that's what God showed me, he saw that fight not only from his own brain, but from the brain of that little kid looking up and getting beaten up by my father as a 12-year-old. Mm-hmm. And he said that time doesn't exist, that he was up there at least 20 years, maybe even much, much more, because that's how long it took God to show him all of these lessons. And then after God finished, God told him a whole bunch of instructions. And I said, well, do you remember any of that? He said, how the hell do I know? That was 15 years ago. And so I then turned to my mother. I said, Mom, you never told me this. And she said, we've only spoken about it once. It was the day that he woke up from his surgery. He told me in detail what had happened. And we've never spoke about it since, because I told him, go back to sleep. Because you just came out of major surgery. It was just a dream. And they've never spoken about it since. And so that night, driving home, I looked up at the sky, and I said to both God and to the ETs, I said, congratulations, you have managed to completely transform a rationalist materialist atheist into someone that has a belief, more of a belief in God, the spirit world, and that there is life after death than any Catholic priest in Miami. And I still believe that to this day. And it's not a faith, and it's not belief. It's just, I know, you know, I know it's true.
That's just an incredible story. It's an amazing story. And you know what makes it even more amazing is what you've done since then. Because again, that's what really impresses me. And I think has to give people one pause on one side to say, why has this guy totally transformed his life? And also it's going to raise the question of why don't more people do that? And what I'm referring to is you go on and now you've set up this organization, you and Mary Rodwell and
Christina Knowles.
Yes. And Christina Knowles, the three of you together. But you've really, I know, have been one of the main driving forces behind this, the Foundation for Research into Extraterrestrial Encounters. Ray, why did you feel a need to do this? And why put yourself out there like that? I mean, again, can you speak to that? Because it keeps gnawing at me. And that is, you know what, the way I bring it up on this show, I always say the way I experienced it myself was the how can this be question. Right. So you run into this stuff and you're overwhelmed by the evidence of it. And let me interject. I'm not an experiencer. Right. So I'm running into some of this evidence secondhand, but it piles up and I'm a kind of scientifically minded guy. And I say, hey, that's just the way the evidence goes. There's no way around it. You can't fake it. You can't make it go away. You can't. So you have to deal with it. And then the next question is, but how can this be? How can all this stuff be true? And yet I live in this world where you're crazy if you believe this, or you have to explain yourself to everyone 50 times over, and you have to question your own sanity. I mean, how did you wrestle with that? And do you still wrestle with just how crazy this sounds to most people?
Well, Alex, I'm dealing with two levels of craziness here. One is the level of craziness that you deal with so many of your guest speakers is explaining consciousness, okay? Because you have all these rationalist types that appear on your show trying to, you know, debunk this concept. But yet, you know, everyone that has worked in this arena for quite a while, to them, it's like, you know, it's like one of the hidden secrets of humanity.
Right.
You know, it's not, sure. it's nobody knows about this, but yet it's for real. It exists, you know. Now, when you add to that, not only the consciousness component of it, and in my case, you're adding the ET aspect of it, which, you know, is even more crazier, you know, that there are other beings, non-human intelligent beings out there that are so much far more sophisticated, maybe possibly multidimensional in origin, that are interacting with us. And so when you add those two components, the consciousness component and the spiritual component, and then this other ET component, it's like a double whammy. So it can make anybody, first of all, think that they're losing their mind, number one. Secondly, it totally isolates you because maybe with the consciousness components of it, you can have maybe a theological conversation, you know, with a priest in terms of spirit and the soul and things like that sort. And other friends that might be religious. So at least you can have conversations in that type of an arena. But now when you add the ET twist, you know, who in the hell can you talk to about these things, you know?
Right. And you know what I think? I'd love to hear your opinion on this. I think this is the point at which a lot of people back off. They back off. They push it down. They push it away. Maybe like your father and your mom said, we're not talking about this anymore. Because at a level that is only a little bit below their conscious level, they're like, I can't afford to shatter my worldview. I just can't take it. So I better stay and play it safe here. And I think it's so brave that you didn't do that. But I mean, we've seen a lot of people, you have, I know I have, who they totally screw up their life with this stuff because it is very hard to integrate this stuff into a normal life, isn't it?
Oh, most definitely, most definitely. I mean, my friends, I tried to tell them about it. They know I'm sound mind. You know, I'm not nuts. Also, they've spoke with my daughter. My daughter tells them I've seen this thing. You know, it was a huge craft. All the details. They spoke with my wife. My wife does not deny it. She tells them. So now all of our friends, they've got three people that have seen this thing in one family. And they know we're not making this up. Why would we make this up? You know, there's, you know, I'm not writing a book. I'm not getting to be wealthy, you know, by all of this. I could lose my job over this because I'm a full-time estate tax attorney with the IRS. I'm also a licensed attorney in the state of Florida. And literally, you know, you could get fired for doing some of this crazy stuff.
Well, anyone who thinks that there's some economic benefit to this isn't familiar with the publishing business or the fact that people who appear on TV, they don't get any money from any of this stuff. I mean, that's just an incredibly naive assumption that people make that really don't know what they're talking about.
There's really no incentive for me to be saying these things.
And of course,
and it's totally out of character for me. And all of my friends, basically, they now, a good many of them accept our experiences, but they just have a hard time, you know, rationalizing this because of what's out there in society. But let me explain to you what made it very easy, Alex, for me to make this next transition. If this next event had not happened to me, I would have just been like a normal person that's having all of these quote-unquote paranormal experiences or, you know, ufology, ET type of experiences, and we would have left it at that. But what had happened was in May of 2012, I was driving one day to go to work. early in the morning, about 8:30 in the morning, in the middle of traffic jam, going into downtown Miami, and I got what I'm phrasing as an ET download. And what it was a voice that appeared inside my head, and associated with that voice was also a video that was inside my head. And what it was, the voice was that I needed to form an organization discussing the relationship between ETs, the spirit world, and quantum physics. And what I saw as the video component was a wheel. I was in the middle of the fulcrum, and it was spinning all around me. And in the different spokes had a different paranormal phenomenon inside the different spokes. So, for example, NDEs, out of body, mystical meditation, remote viewing, telepathy, ETs, the spirit world, you know, et cetera, all floating around are in these different paranormal related spokes. And what was holding everything together was quantum physics. So that same day that I got that download, I got an email from Mary Rodwell. And the email stated, "Dear Ray, I'm sorry I am replying to your email from 5 months ago, but I just found it today." And recently I asked Mary, I said, "Mary, how often do you go back 5 months to retrieve email that's 5 months old?"
Right.
And she started laughing. She says, "Ray, I can barely keep up with one day's emails, let alone going back 5 months. I never do that." And I said, "Well, how do you explain what happened?" And she started laughing at me. She says, "Ray, you know what happened." That it basically was put there in front of her by one of these non-human intelligent beings. So anyway, I then emailed her back and I said, "Well, this is what happened today." And I told her the details of the experience. She then said, "Oh my God, we need to Skype." And so we had a Skype conversation. At that point, she told me that she's a very dear friend with Dr. Rudy Shields, who's a retired professor of astrophysics at Harvard. And she had met him a couple of years before when she was up in the U.S. Making a presentation before the John Mack board after Dr. Mack had passed away. Then very next day at 9:30 in the morning, I got a phone call from Dr. Rudy Shields, totally unexpected. I had never spoken with him before. I almost forgot his name. And then at that point, he started spoon feeding me like a little baby for 90 minutes how quantum physics can explain the paranormal phenomenon, including, you know, the quote unquote, the spirit world can explain consciousness, and it could explain the UFO ET phenomenon. And then he said, "Ray, I encourage you to form an organization." At that point, it wasn't even in my mind to do this. And then he said, "And by the way, I'm dear friends with Dr. Edgar Mitchell, who only lives 90 minutes away from you. And as a matter of fact, I'm going to call him and email him, let him know of our conversation. And this is his telephone number." So I already knew who Dr. Mitchell was. Basically, he was, besides being an astronaut and having a PhD from MIT in physics, he's also the father of modern consciousness studies, based upon all the books that I had read.
Right. And is a founder of IONS, of course, which kind of puts him in that position.
Yes.
Right.
Institute of Noetic Sciences, and also Quantrac, which is an organization focused on physics, mm-hmm. Of modern physics. And so I was thoroughly familiar with him. And for about 4 hours, I did not call him because I was literally scared to give him a call. It was like you're talking to like a demigod or something like that. So anyway, I give him a call late in the afternoon. Then he says, "I've been expecting your phone call." I'm like, "Oh my God, this guy's expecting my phone call." And then he told me that Rudy had both emailed and called him up, said I was an individual that he needed to listen to. And he invited me into to his house the very next day. And it was a 90-minute trip. He lives in Lake Worth, Florida. And at that point, it was like, it's like you're meeting a sage. He started telling me about his childhood, how he grew up in Roswell, how when he was a youngster, he would work at a local airport and he was paid by flying lessons. How he was part of Chuck Yeager's test pilot group. He had met many of the astronauts, original astronauts were from that group. How when he returned as a hero from the moon, how all these old timers that he had knew growing up in Roswell started telling him all these intimate details of the Roswell crash, on and on and on, how his parents owned two stores dedicated to the farming community, and he knew, you know, most of the families in that town and in the area. And then he says, when I get to know you a little bit better, I'll tell you a little bit more of the intimate stories. And so at that point, he then said, look, Ray, I recommend, just like Rudy, for you to form an organization to address these topics that we've been discussing. And Rudy and I will be your scientific advisors. So it was at that point that I then called Mary. I emailed her. And then Christina is an experiencer, and she was the only person that I had been in contact with for like the last 3 or 4 months regarding my experiences. Before that, I had no one to talk to. And so we had a three-way call, and I told them what had happened over the last 2 days with these two geniuses. And I said, look, we're being divinely guided to move in this direction, and we need, you know, we need to do it, and we need to form this organization. And at that point, we agreed to be the founders, that Rudy and Edgar would be our initial advisory board. And that was when Free was formed. And basically now we have a who's who in the ET experiencer phenomenon. And we also have 5 quantum physicists in our group. We have 2 medical doctors. We have a research geneticist, many professionals. We have about 5 PhDs, psychologists in our group, including Dr. Leo Sprinkle and Dr. John Klimo, who is, in my opinion, the world's leading academic authority on the paranormal. And then numerous other individuals in the ufology and ET contact field.
And there's some unique aspects to your approach to the phenomena that we should talk about. One that you've just mentioned, which is this welcoming cross-pollinization of near-death experience, extraordinary spiritual experience, ET experience. You want to kind of bring those all together, not in a way that forces them together, but in a way that is open to looking at how there are parallels between the two. So that's number one I want you to talk about. But the second thing I want you to talk about is that I get the sense that you are, and the name actually conveys this, you are experiencer-centered. That is, you're trying to fill the gap, I guess, for so much of what we've talked about here in this interview, and that is how unsettling and at the same time enabling this thing, this experience can be for people. And you want to be that resource that helps people take that experience and allow them to propel forward with it rather than just have it crush them. And I think that's an awesome, awesome role for this group to fill. Do you want to talk about those two aspects
of it? Surely. Let me first of all mention our website, which is very, very important. Our website is experiencer.co, not com, but .co. So it's experiencer.co. And we just recently completed that website a couple of weeks ago. Now, in terms of, how should I say, the objectives of Free. Free has 3 objectives. One objective is education. Education in the sense that no one knows about these phenomena, you know, the consciousness phenomenon and the experiencer ET contact phenomenon. The whole world is clueless, and yet you have, you know, possibly hundreds of thousands, possibly millions of individuals having contact with these non-human intelligent beings, except that everyone just stays quiet. Everyone, you know, never speaks about it. So in terms of education, the approach that we're taking is that, first of all, we have a little bit over, I think it's 21 individuals on our free advisory board. And just to let the public know that you are one of our members of our advisory board.
Yes, happy to be.
Yes, thank you. And also to let the public know that out of all the members of our board, everyone except 2 individuals are experiencers. That's very important. Okay. I would say there are many individuals in our group that do not publicly proclaim that they're experiencers and have come out in the open, out of the closet, so to speak. But I can tell you that you are one of them. That's not an experiencer. And I'll let the audience guess who the other member is. So in a sense, it's an organization by experiencers for experiencers. So in terms of education, we believe that the topic of consciousness is fundamental to the educational aspects of it. Why? For many reasons. One is because I was guided into that direction, as I've told you, in my spirits, in my experiences. Secondly, the way these ETs contact us, okay, it's like a format that you cannot be explained rationally. It's a format that if you model consciousness, that's a way of possibly explaining this type of communication. We also believe that the ET contact experiences are related to the paranormal, including near-death experiences. There was one call that I was on. We had seven experiencers on our call. I won't mention the names, but if I mention a few, you would know who they are. Out of those seven individuals, six have had near-death experiences. I was the only one that did not. And then if you would do a poll to find out how many experiencers, the real in-depth, hardcore experiencers have had NDEs, I would say statistically, it would be significant the amount of experiencers that have had NDEs. Now, don't tell me, you know, the specifics of that relationship. I have my own hypotheses at this point, but at this point, you cannot begin to pin these complex phenomena down. So, in summary, the concept of consciousness and the approach that we're taking with consciousness is the physics approach to consciousness, particularly the quantum hologram theory of physics. Both Dr. Mitchell, Dr. Rudy Shields, Ralph Steiner, Dr. Jude Curvin, and one other undisclosed individual who's also a physics genius, all of them believe that the quantum hologram is the physics explanation for consciousness. And I'm sure you've gotten that indication from many of your presenters in the past. But Edgar was the very first one that made this intimate association after David Bohm and Carl Primum. Edgar took it to the next level. And he has several articles on our website that explains that connection between quantum hologram theory and consciousness.
Hey Ray, let me interject here, because as long as you just touched on it, you know, you mentioned the educational component of what you're trying to do, and then you just mentioned one of the articles from Edgar Mitchell. You have some great material there, so tell folks real quickly about some of that kind of material that they can find. I mean, really hardcore research stuff that they might not find anyplace else, they can find at experiencer.co.
Surely, surely. Well, our website is the primary tool that we're trying to convey the topic of education to the audience. Our target audience is not just experiencers. Our target audience is also the public at large, and also in particular scientists. But because we're trying to, as you said, how do you cross that bridge between these rationalist types, these types that have a totally closed-minded approach to what we're doing? And what we're trying to do is bring individuals in to talk about, you know, hardcore physics publications that have been peer-reviewed publications, put them on our website that would serve as a bridge into not only the consciousness field, but also into the ET experiencer field. And so thus, what we have is we have two, quote-unquote, scientifically oriented menus. One menu of articles is dedicated to physics, and primarily it's the quantum hologram theory of physics. We have several articles there that are for the average person. I wouldn't say they're easy reads, but, you know, the average person can read them and digest a good majority of them. We have several intermediate level articles, and then some articles that were written, you know, by Penrose and Hameroff and Dr. Mitchell, which are, you know, advanced physics articles. So that's the consciousness aspect, excuse me, the physics aspects. We also have a consciousness menu, and that's all dealing with the physics of consciousness. And we also have some other articles that are not directly related to the physics of consciousness, but more related to the science of consciousness. And we have an article by Rupert Sheldrake and various other academics. And we also threw in a couple articles in there from the experiencer side of consciousness. So it's attacking the problem of consciousness grounded in science, but taking different types of approaches to it. Then the other types of articles that we have are articles that you would see more in the mainstream ufology or ET contact field, except for this other one. I wrote a paper titled the paranormal quantum hologram theory of ET contact. And what that is sort of an introduction to the ET experiencer field and introducing the concepts of the paranormal, which everyone has always suspected and has documented through numerous books and writings of various paranormal experiences that have happened with experiencers. And so we're trying to introduce a little bit of the science of the paranormal into the field of ufology and ET contact. And within that that menu, we want to introduce how other ways that people have experienced non-human intelligent beings. For example, NDEs, okay? These spirits that you see in NDEs, many of the experience of the individuals that have had NDEs describe that experience as more real than our own reality. I'm sure that you've heard that before, you know?
Yes, right, of course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was more vivid, more live, more real than our reality right now. So that's a common theme articulated by individuals that have had NDEs. So they encountered these spirits. Aren't these spirits non-human intelligent beings? You know, why lop them together? Many individuals describe these beings as communicating telepathically. Well, almost all these ETs communicated that way. They describe these in this so-called spirit world, individuals dressed in robes, you know, white robes, good many of the time. Well, many individuals that have seen these ETs describe them as wearing white robes. On and on and on, the comparisons. You then take the book by the Dr. Ring, Kenneth Ring.
Right.
Mm-hmm. The last book that he did on the Omega Project, where he did a quantitative and qualitative study comparing individuals that have had near-death experiences with individuals that have had ET contact experiences. And his conclusion was, you're talking about the same individual, literally. It's almost the same identical characteristics of how they changed over time. You're talking about the same person. And so when you add all of these things together, to me, in my mind, it's like there is some type of relationship between, you know, the spirit world, individuals that are having contact with spirit world entities through NDEs, and the experiencer ETs. Then I've also spoken with many individuals, and I'm sure you've interviewed some of them, that are like Buddhist monks, are experts in meditation, and they go straight into the matrix. In their meditations, and then in the matrix, they encounter different types of entities. Mm-hmm. Some of these entities might be quote unquote spirit, you know, type of angelic entities, and then some of them would be entities that would be more classically described as ETs through the UFO field. Mm-hmm. And then many of these individuals describe to me that after a while of being in the matrix, over a couple of years or a couple of months, then these entities began physically appearing in front of them. So they started off through mystical meditation or out-of-body experiences, seeing these entities, and then over a certain period of time, depending on who you speak with, these entities then began to physically appear in our reality. And then that's a topic that almost no one knows about. Okay, remote viewers, Ingo Swann and Courtney Brown, just two of the more popular remote viewers, and numerous others, have described in many of their writings, in their remote viewing, they have had interactions with non-human intelligent beings. Right. And a good many of them look like the ETs that are described in the ufology, the experiencer phenomenon. And some of them are more of the monkish types. Like monks robe dress, similar to the people who've had NDEs. Okay, so are all these remote viewers just, you know, totally off? Are they lying? Okay, and it's not just a few. We're talking about, you know, a good many of these experienced remote viewers. What explains that, Alex? Okay, so what our website is trying to do is saying, look, so far we've speaking about all these concepts in isolation. When we talk about consciousness studies, we just isolate consciousness studies separately. We don't associate it with anything else. When we talk about NDEs, I know you're an exception. When we talk about NDEs, okay, there's just the Institute for Near-Death Experiences Studies and like three or four other major organizations, but they don't put it all together in one soup. Remote viewers, et cetera, you know? What we're trying to do in free is to mix all of that together into one melting pot. You add physics. You add the science of consciousness studies. You add all the paranormal. You add the ET contact experiences with ufology. You mix it all up, and that's what Free is doing. And we're doing it at a level that Archie Bunker can understand it, as well as a scientist that's been classically trained. So that pretty much is the educational aspect of it.
Well, it's a huge, huge undertaking. Give people a sense for, well, let me say this. Let's try and move towards wrapping this up. But so, Ray, you've given us a good sense of what's there and what kind of people might find it important and interesting. And it's really quite a diverse crowd. You, on one hand, it's for experiencers, people who are looking to connect and understand what's happened to them. It's a great resource for them, and also for people who are just on the outside but curious and trying to sort this out logically and rationally. There's a ton of stuff they would find. Tell folks a little bit about where you see this going. Where is Free headed towards, and what is it really trying to accomplish? What are the goals?
There's two other topics which I won't go into detail with one of them. One is the support topic. There are a lot of people who have trauma associated with these experiences, and we're providing a whole range of support. We have an experiencer forum. We have a list of 20-something pages of professionals that provide support to experiencers, either licensed mental health therapists, regression therapists, support groups, etc. Now, the other aspect, that which is sort of one of my babies, is the research aspect of it. Myself being an academic, one of the first things I did was to do an academic literature review of individuals that have had contact with UFO-related non-human intelligent beings. And what I found out was that there was almost nothing there. We know so little about this phenomenon, the experience that I had. And I was like, this can't be. How could it be? I've read literally, you know, thousands of stories of individuals that have had these experiences, but yet we know nothing about this phenomenon. So it was that point that I started to write out an abstract of a research project to begin to do a long-term, comprehensive, academic, and eventually peer-reviewed research project on the experiencer phenomenon. So I approached Dr. John Klimo, who I identified as probably the leading authority on the paranormal in the U.S., academic authority. And out of the blue, I just called him. I sent him an email, and then he gave me his telephone number, and we spoke. And so I mentioned what we were doing at Free. I told him about my research project that I want to get off the ground. And then he told me that he has been a lifelong experiencer. And then at that point, I knew that I was guided to this individual. This was not another coincidence. This is another synchronicity. It's not even a word for it, okay? Because it's one after another. And so then, John, I told him a little bit about my ideas, and he said, Ray, I was born for this. You know, you know, he was like salivating, you know, to jump at this idea. So then I told him, I want to bring in Dr. Leo Sprinkle, who pretty much was the first academic to do this type of research. And Leo published his first article on this. I believe it was 1962, or 1962 is when he began to do this type of research. And Leo is, I think, either 84 or 85 years old, a retired psychologist, and has numerous publications on the ET contact phenomenon, academic publications, and many non-academic, because who in the hell would publish these things? You know, you can't find a ready academic outlet for these things. So he had to go through different routes for a lot of his publications. And then to support these two academics, we've got, as you know, a who's who in this field. We've got Mary Rodwell, Denise Stoner. We've got Dr. Joe Lewis. We've got Whitley Streeter, Linda Moltenhaus, a consultant to our group, Denise Stoner, many individuals who have been working with experiencers for at least 30 years. And there's about four or five other individuals, which I won't name, but so I apologize if they listen to this interview, but it's just so many names. And so we established a quantitative survey instrument, which is embedded in our website now. And we're in the process of developing 20 secondary research instruments, qualitative and quantitative, addressing a series of topic areas. For example, the individuals that have received science and physics downloads, okay, what questions would you ask these individuals? So that's one of the topic areas. Another topic area is...
I'm sorry, Ray, can you clarify then? So you're saying one of the research projects you're kind of interested in doing is asking people who report that they've received this download, and this is a kind of common thing, that not common, but it's not unheard of by any means, and you'll hear it over and over again. People say, I received this information download, and then you're the first one to ask the obvious question, well, what did you hear? What did you know? And then comparing that with other people who've heard it. So that's interesting. That's
yeah,
what you're doing.
Correct. We it's all one study. But what we have is we have an initial quantitative survey on our website, which is basically to identify who might have had an experience, quote unquote. We then have 20 different survey instruments. And an example of one of these 20s is if someone in the initial survey instrument stated that they have had downloads of science or physics, then this additional secondary instrument would be done through an interviewer. And so if someone has said, okay, I want to participate in your second level, second round in this research study, we would have an interviewer that would call this person up and begin doing a very lengthy interview. And then we would have these sheets, depending on how they responded to the first initial survey, to run by the questions. And so I have identified at least 20 individuals that I've spoken with in the last year and a half that have told me about their science and physics, quote unquote, downloads. Some people have seen sort of like a flat top screen right in front of them. And this was one of them, Ralph Steiner, for example, a member of our group, said he saw one of those in 65 before they were even invented. You had one of these flat screens that was right in front of them. And down was loading modifications of Maxfield field equations, you know, and he recognized them, but he didn't recognize the modifications. So he took a pen, he started writing these things down. It was like posted right in front of him. So that's just one example. As I said, I've at least 20 people I've spoken with have gotten these types of things. I won't go into details of some of these other individuals, but it is not as rare as people think it is. So we want to be able to study that particular topic and numerous other topic areas. For example, Dr. Kenneth Ring's book was all on spiritual transformation, the vast majority of it. So we want to use the same questions that he asked of experiencers and NDEers regarding spiritual transformations. So we don't have to invent the wheel with that topic to see how people have changed, just like myself. You know, how do you get in 2.5 years someone you know, who's a total atheist, you know, into someone who has more faith, not faith, that's not even the word. I know, you know, that we are spirit, you know.
Right. And if you talk about looking at it from a sociological or psychological standpoint, if you're going to do that kind of research, this stuff would be highly, highly, you know, significant. It's just the kind of stuff
correct.
People would look at.
And so it's an academically driven research study into a phenomenon that the total world is clueless on. Totally clueless. No one knows that this is going on, yet experiencers know that it's a real phenomenon. And there's a let me just to say how large this phenomenon is, Alex. I have a neighbor, which I won't tell you where she lives, okay? But this individual, actually, I invited her to Edgar's house, and she came with me because I've been to Edgar's house about 5 times already. She's an experiencer, full-blown experiencer, and I would have never known that she was. She lives in my neighborhood very close to where I live. Okay. She said that her 2 children have witnessed these things. Her father has witnessed these experiences. And her husband knows about it, but every time he gets knocked out, you know, he's not allowed to see these things. And then the story, and this woman, I mean, this is a highly educated lady. Her husband is a very well-known attorney in Miami. Just to give you a little background, you know, so why would this woman be making this stuff up? And the reason I told her was about a year after I had witnessed that experience, our old dog had died and we had purchased a puppy. The puppy escaped the house and she managed to flag the puppy down. And then all of a sudden inside my head was like, should I tell her or should I not? I said, the hell with it. And I told her what we had seen in my next door neighbor's house. And out of the blue, she said, myself and my family have witnessed these crafts and these entities for many, many years since I was a child. And at that point, I was like, you know, this shit can't be real. I'm sorry for the poor little word, but
Right. But, no, that's no problem.
You know, you're talking about emotions, you're coming out, but it was like, in my head, it was like, this can't be real, you know? Because you're still, every time you're fighting it, Alex, you're fighting it. Your rational mind is still fighting it. But yet you're always brought back to this new reality that no one knows about this, that the vast majority of humanity is totally clueless, just like the topic of consciousness. Everyone is clueless about this phenomenon. And you're constantly reminded of this. It's like they're forcing me to constantly, when I get some doubts, boom, you know, they put something in front of me.
Well, that's what's so great about the way that you've approached this, is that you really have that sensibility, because I think that it's unfortunate, but many people who get too far in, for lack of a better term, into the phenomena, into the experience, can't come back and relate stuff in a way that the rest of us can really hook into, because we all have that going on in our head. We all have that protection mechanism. We all have that need to control and to turn things into something that we're comfortable with, that conforms with our reality. And the other aspect of it, and I remember seeing this in a John Mack interview, and I thought it was wonderful. You know, John Mack, who the Harvard psychiatrist, as you mentioned, who so was pulled into the experience or phenomena in such a dramatic way. But what he says is, you know, especially here in the West, especially in the United States, you don't want to be a sucker, you know? You better to be a skeptic and be wrong than to be a sucker and be hooked into this. And I think that you do a great job of that, both in your presentation and in the website and in the spirit of it, is saying, hey, look, we're still trying to work this stuff out in a way that makes sense for all of us. And I think that's very engaging. So that's another part of this that I really commend you on.
Yeah, I think one issue, Alex, is that, as I said, I've only been involved in this quote-unquote field for about a year and a half. And what I've noticed is that there are extreme approaches, extreme outcomes to individuals that have had experiences like I have. On the one hand, you have individuals who totally put on the blinders and do not fully acknowledge their experiences and pursue them in an enlightening, you know, educational way. Like, okay, you know, maybe there's something else to it. You know, let me take another look at this, you know. So a lot of individuals are running around with blinders. They know this exists, but they don't talk to anybody. They're not in the open. And I've met many of those. Now you get another extreme, Alex. And those are the individuals that all of a sudden go to the complete extreme of the other side. And that is everything that they see, they associate with this phenomenon. So if you see little lights in the sky, it could be a lightning bug, okay? But no, those are orbs. They're coming to greet me at night. And then, you know, you might imagine, you know, telepathic communications and stuff like that when you might not hear it, you know? Because these individuals have had so much craziness in their life that their whole reality then becomes this type of an environment, a total paranormal environment, which seeks additional explanations and clarifications. I'm not denying that that these individuals are having numerous of these type of experiences, but when you hear someone talk about every day, this thing is happening, that other thing is happening, then again, my own skeptic mind, you know, it's like, well, wait a second, you know. Maybe it's not completely true. Maybe this person has gone to that extreme.
Well, one of the problems is, as you mentioned, is that this phenomena isolates people, and different aspects of it isolates them even further. As I think you did a wonderful job of really explaining that in a way that few people probably can appreciate. But you know, if you have some kind of extraordinary experience and you identify it as a spiritual experience, maybe you can find a group to comfort you or to that you fit into. But if you want to really explore this and get deeper and broader, like, and say, well, wait a minute, what about ET? What about all the rest of this? man, you're really talking about narrowing it down to a smaller and smaller group.
Yes, yes. You're cutting the apple more each time.
That's right.
If you're just dealing with the consciousness field or the NDE field, then you're still talking some rationality here, you know?
And we all have a basic human need for community, no matter how much we can go it alone or feel like we can be independent. We need that confirmation from other people. We need that sense of community, that sense of belonging. And it can be a bad thing because you can then just crave that so much that you follow the group and will do whatever the group has directed you to do. But that really isn't at all what you're doing. You're really trying to do something that is providing that sense of community, providing that sense of support, but always anchoring it from what I can see. And I just think this is so great about what you're doing, but always anchored in information, knowledge, scientific approach to trying to understand this phenomenon. I think that's really unique and is to be commended.
Thank you, Alex. Thank you. As you know, you've spoken to many individuals that have had these types of paranormal experiences, and I'll use the word paranormal, and because they're all looped in together, they're all intertwined, and it can be quite traumatic for individuals, and yet these individuals know that this reality is for real, you know, that this thing is happening, but yet society is totally clueless, just as to the concept of consciousness in terms of spirit or soul, how whatever you're going to be defining it. Many individuals that you have on your radio show, they've been studying this for many, many years. Some of them have a belief in it. Others know it as a fact, especially the people that have had near-death experiences. So from my perspective, you know, the vast majority of humanity is totally clueless to what's going on. And you talk about paradigm shifts all the time on your radio show. And I think for these two types of experiences, the issue of the consciousness and the relationship of consciousness to the ET contact phenomenon, that's going to be the ultimate paradigm shift. You know, hopefully in 100 years, we'll be able to get at least some responses to some of the complicated questions our research team is going to be asking, and a little bit better understanding of this complex phenomenon. But indeed, we know so little about this phenomenon. And that's the approach that FREE is taking, at least the members of our advisory board. We're leaving all of our preconceived notions behind, all of our prior research work that has been done by individuals that are a good many of them in their 60s and 70s, and some of them in their 80s. And we've all taken the approach that we know almost nothing about this complicated phenomenon. And then there's an urgent need to begin, you know, trying to understand it.
Right. It's really a great effort. I hope many, many skeptical listeners will check out and dip into this amazing body of information you've pulled together at experiencer.co. Please check it out. And Ray, I hope we can have you back maybe in a year's time. And I'm sure this journey will just take you further and further into this, but it'll be interesting to keep tabs on what's going on and keep our skeptical listeners up to speed with what's going on. So with that, thanks so much for joining me. It's been just great having you on. Unless I've missed anything, there's anything else you need to add?
Well, I just want to tell the audience that you were one of my saviors in my initial state of confusion. You were one of the few rational radio blogs that I listened to on a weekly basis and really brought me back to my sanity. And I just want to thank you for that.
Oh, Ray, that's so nice of you to say, man. It's been my pleasure knowing you, and I look forward to everything that you're bringing forth. It's kind of scary, man, because like I say, I'm not an experiencer, so I don't know how I got mixed up in this whole thing, but the more I listen to you, I think, gosh, maybe there's some purpose behind it. I don't know.
I'm telling you, there is a purpose. We don't know what in the world it is, but there is a purpose behind it, Alex.
Okay, Ray, you take care.
All right, Alex, you take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks again to Ray Hernandez for joining me today on Skeptico. I have one question to tee up from this interview, and that would be, what do you think is the most important research that needs to be done in order to get to the bottom of this experiencer phenomena? What do we need more of? Broad surveys of how many people have had these kinds of experiences and what these experiences involve? More detailed drilling into some particular experiences and how those can be understood more thoroughly? And I guess related to that is, How should Ray's group go about doing this kind of research? I know there's a lot of really smart people in the Skeptico audience. I bet you have some pretty creative and useful ideas about how to move this kind of research forward, and I'd love to hear those ideas. Of course, the place to do it is through the Skeptico website at S-K-P-E-T-I-K-O. Don't forget the double K there. From there, you can jump on over to the forum and join the dialogue there. Leave a comment directly on the website or connect with me through Facebook or email and give me your thoughts. Well, that's going to do it for this episode of Skeptico. I do have a number of great episodes coming up, and John and I are doing our best to get these out to you as soon as we can. We'll see how that jives with the holiday season we're going through here in the United States, but we'll certainly try our best. Until next time, take care and bye for now.